Dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, and sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit, and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. I want to begin with a message, December the 8th, 1931. It's a very wonderful message. It's a pity we couldn't do it on December the 8th, but never mind. And it tells us how our Blessed Mother actually works with us in our living of the divine will. So Louisa said, "I continue my abandonment in the divine fiat. Its sweet chains clasp me so tightly, but not so as to take my freedom from me." Now, we've seen this throughout all of the volumes, that no matter how much you surrender to the divine will, your free will is actually never taken from you, neither on earth nor in heaven. People who turn to the occult world and give their allegiance to the demon find that their free will is taken from them very, very quickly. It's a huge difference between the two kingdoms. So even though Louisa has gone very, very deep into the divine will, her freedom is still there. She says, no. But to render me more free in the divine fields. In other words, when you get to work, and we're going to be talking about the divine fields tonight, when we get to work in the divine fields, that you have the freedom to work there. You're not just there and being told what to do and ordered around like a robot. God is not interested in robots. He's interested in children that he has brought to life, that he has cleansed and purified in redemption, that he has sanctified in the third fiat. He's interested in their working with him. So she said, no, it's to render me more free in the divine fields and to keep me defended from everyone and from everything. Now, the first defense that we need is from ourselves and from our own ego. That's the first defense. And then to be defended from any attack coming from either human or preternatural place. So she said, I felt safer. So the heading I want to put on this paragraph is safe in the divine will, unsafe outside of it. So I felt safer, enchained by the divine will. Now, that chaining is through love. Because she's talking about a very strong, unbreakable bond. And while I was doing my acts in the divine will, I felt the need of my celestial mother for her to help me and to sustain my little acts so that they might encounter the divine satisfaction and smile. So she wants to please God, and so she wants the help of our Blessed Mother. So it's this request of Louisa that gets Jesus to give us this incredible revelation. And the celestial consoler, that's Jesus, who is unable to deny me anything. Why? Because she does not deny him anything. You remember I told you the testimony of Padre Pio when he was asked, why is it that the Lord works so many miracles through you? He simply said, I deny him nothing and he denies me nothing. Well, this is what Louise is saying as well. So this is a person completely given to the Lord. So I'm unable to deny him anything when it comes to anything to do with pleasing him. Now, if you've studied St. Thérèse of Lisieux, her whole motivation in life was to please the Lord. So he visited my poor soul, she said, and Jesus said, my daughter, our celestial mother, notice the our, she's yours and mine. Our celestial mother holds primacy over all the good acts of creatures. And this is going to be explained in great detail. She, as queen, has the mandate, that is the mandate from the Most Blessed Trinity, and therefore the right to make the withdrawal of all, instead of saying their, let's say our, acts into hers. She can withdraw all of our acts into hers. Her love as both queen and mother is so great that as the creature disposes herself to form an act of love. Now, this is all about love. And it is presumed and it's understood in this text that any act you do in the divine will is an act of love, because any motivation besides love is actually not acceptable. So when we dispose ourselves to form an act of love, from the height of her throne, our Blessed Mother makes a ray of her love descend. She invests and surrounds every act of love from each one of her children living in the divine will, understood, to place in them from her own as the prime love. So our little acts are just not left there on their own to try and find a way into the divine pleasure that our Blessed Mother actually invests. If you want an image of that, you will have seen it many times in your own house. And that is a child trying to do something and the mother enabling the child to do it. The mother helping, the mother adding her own knowledge, her own love, her own wisdom, her own strength, everything to help the child to actually achieve what it's trying to do. This is what we're being told here. So as the act is formed, the Blessed Mother takes it up within her own ray of love, which of course is immensely greater than ours. And into the fount of her love, that means the source of her love. And she says to her Creator, now this time she's praying for us on our behalf, Adorable Majesty, in my love, which always springs for you, in other words, anything I do is only for you, there is the love of my children fused within my own. Now look what she's doing. She's fusing all our acts in hers so that they can be raised to a very great height. And I, with the right of a queen, she said, have withdrawn into my sea of love so that you may find in my own love the love of all your creatures. Now go back to the hours of the Passion. And you have Jesus there interceding with the Father, and he's taking up everything from the creatures he's trying to redeem. He takes them up into his own and he does reparation. He does the redoing of everything. Now here you have our Blessed Mother imitating him. So everything is drawn up into her seas of love, so that you, Lord, may find, she said, in my own love, the love of all creatures. Okay, so what does this mean? It means that if they adore, if they pray, if they repair, if they suffer, from the height of her throne descends a ray of her adoration, a ray of her prayer, the ray of her reparation. She unleashes the vivifying ray from within the sea of her sorrows, and she invests and surrounds the adoration, the prayer, the reparation, and the sufferings of her children. So she is making everything right. She's making everything better. She's making everything acceptable to God. I just think this is an absolutely marvelous thing that she's doing. So she compensates for our poor acts. She embellishes our poor acts. She fortifies our poor acts. She makes up for us. And she makes sure that the acts that we do are actually correct and right in the eyes of God. So she unleashes the vivifying ray within the sea of her sorrows, and she invests and surrounds the adoration, prayer, reparation, and sufferings of her children. And when they have done and formed the act in the divine will, the same ray of light takes them up into her throne, and they fuse within the fount of the seas of the adoration, prayer, reparation, and sorrows of the Celestial Mother. Now, it's at this point when all of our acts are taken up into hers, and she has compensated for us, embellished our acts, she has fortified them, she's made them right and everything. It's at that point she presents them. And so she presents them to the Lord, and she says, Majesty Most Holy, my adoration extends in all the adorations of creatures. You could change that to my children. My prayer prays to you in their prayer. That's absolutely wonderful. So here you have a child praying to its father, and the mother has actually added her voice, and the father is actually hearing mother and daughter at the same time. So my prayer prays to you in their prayer, repairs with their reparation, and as the mother, my sorrows invest and surround all of their pains, making them much more valuable, of course. I will not feel myself to be a queen if I do not run and place my prime act, which of course is utterly pure because she has been in the absolute surrender to the divine will from the first instant of her being. So her prime act, she has to place them over all of our acts and makes them much more acceptable. Nor will I enjoy the sweetness of being a mother if I do not run to surround and help and compensate for, embellish and fortify all the acts, I'm going to say, of my children, so that I may be able to say, this is wonderful now, the acts of my children are one with mine. That's what makes them so acceptable in the eyes of God. I hold them in my power before God in order to defend them, to help them, and as the sure pledge that they will actually reach me in heaven. Now, what is she saying? That if she takes all our acts and does all that we have just said, that she's holding our acts as a pledge to absolutely make sure that you and I get to heaven. In other words, she's claiming us as her special children. So in the next paragraph, then, she works with us in all of our acts. Therefore, my daughter, Jesus said, you are never alone in your acts. You have the celestial mother together with you. Isn't that a wonderful, wonderful thing? And she is the one who not only surrounds you, but nourishes your act with the light of her virtues. That's the embellishing, you see. In order to give your act life, in fact, you must know that the sovereign queen, even from her immaculate conception, was the first and only creature who formed the link of connection between the creator and the creature, which had been broken by Adam. So it was her task given to her by the Most Blessed Trinity to reconnect heaven and earth through her acts. And what you're being told in this message of December the 8th is that she does it in each of our acts. She makes absolutely certain that our failures, our inability to have enough love and enough faith and enough perseverance, enough knowledge, enough understanding to really make a very rich act, she makes up for it all. She accepted the divine mandate to bind God and men, and she bound them with her prime acts of fidelity, sacrifice, and heroism, of making her will die in each one of her acts. So then what does she do with us? She helps us to make our will die in each one of our acts because we have to be like her. She has, as you know from the messages that came before this one, she has a very special place in heaven for her divine will children, and they all have to be like her. There can't be anyone there who is unlike the mother. So she places everything that she has in our acts, and it's to enable us to die in each one of our acts as well. It's not actually possible for us to surrender our will the way she did in her conception, because that was an exceptional prodigy of God's grace. Our will just surrenders very, very slowly. Now, the will never actually dies. It's just a way of speaking to say that it dies, because you saw at the very beginning of this message that Louisa is in a very high state of union with God, and yet she says she has complete freedom to do what she wants to do and to make the decisions she wants to make. So to make our will die, that's the old sinful ego that's got to die and give way to the new man in Christ. That's 2 Corinthians 5:17. So we have to do this not once, but always, to make that the will of God will live in us again. So making this surrender of our will to God, as you know from your own experience, it just doesn't work if you only do it once a day. You'll forget. And so it needs to be constantly repeated, not my will, but thine be done, O Lord. And very particularly when things are not going the way you want. So here comes a new idea, and I think it's absolutely gorgeous. From this sprang forth a fount of divine love, which cemented God and man. Now, this is 1931. I don't know if that was when they started using cement in a very big way. But I notice in these writings that any time a new word comes into the human dictionary, that Jesus picks it up and uses it. So from this sprang forth a fount of divine love. A fount, of course, is a source, which cemented God and man and all their acts. Now, it would never have been my idea of our Blessed Mother that she was cement. Well, that's what's being said here. It's just an image. So her acts, her maternal love, her dominion as queen are cement that runs and that cements the acts of her children to render them inseparable with her own. So instead of creatures there, I'm using her children, because that's exactly what we're actually speaking about. We're not talking about all creatures on the planet. And unfortunately, in the translation, creatures, like many other words, is used in all kinds of inappropriate ways. We're specifically talking about Blessed Mother's divine will children here. So she is the one that brings our acts into a position of being inseparable from hers. So if they're inseparable from hers, they are totally acceptable to God and extremely powerful. Unless, of course, someone uses the old sinful ego and ungrateful, they refuse to receive the cement of the love of their mother. And you see, one of the most basic things in the unredeemed human race is independence of God, which of course is called pride. I'll do it myself, thank you. I don't need help. I'm not a kid. I'm an adult. I can do it all by myself. Will you try that out spiritually and you'll discover how much of an adult you are. Therefore, Jesus said, you must be convinced that around your patience is the patience of your mother. I think that's absolutely fantastic, because that means that when your patience is being tried, just run into her arms. That's all. Around your patience is the patience of your Queen Mother. I think that's absolutely fantastic. And it surrounds and it sustains and it nourishes yours. And also, when you're going through difficult times, it surrounds and nourishes and helps you in your pains as well. Her sorrows surround you, sustaining and nourishing like balsamic oil the hardness of your pains. In sum, in everything, she is the queen. She is the all-doer, is the language in my translation here, which I find that absolutely an incredible image. The word busybody on the screen, I think, is very wrong. That's a very negative expression. The all-doer, in other words, that our Blessed Mother is totally involved trying to get us to the place of achieving our inheritance in the divine will. That's absolutely fantastic. The all-doer, I think, is lovely. So she's the one who is unable to remain idle upon her throne of glory. Why? Because if she stays idle, her children may not actually get to the place where she wants them to get them. So she descends down to us and she runs as mother into the acts and needs of her children, as you yourself have done as a parent, either father or mother. You help your children out in every way possible because you want your children to reach their proper greatness, their proper growth, so that they can experience everything that life has for them. So that's what she's doing as well, completely involved with us. Therefore, Jesus said, thank her for the many maternal cares and thank God who has given to all generations a mother so holy, so lovable, and who loves so much as to reach the point of acting as the withdrawer of all their acts in order to cover them with her own. So there's your redoing. There's your enhancing. There's your embellishing. Absolutely everything. And it's only when you read some of the great writers on our Blessed Mother, like Maximilian Kolbe and others, that you realise that some Christians have really known her as the treasure that she actually is. Most people that I know simply have a devotion to her without really understanding her. It's much better to understand her, and then all your interaction with her is very real. So she will compensate for all that is lacking in beauty and goodness in us. My word. I think she's going to be a little bit more busy in future with us, isn't she? Now that we realise just exactly what she wants to do. So then Louisa, as she does, changes the topic and she says, I continued my usual round in created things. Now, again, I want to emphasise what rounds are, because these lists with all kinds of naming every mountain and hill and everything and naming every plant and animal as if just saying I love you onto that is what Louisa is talking about. She's not. She said, I continued my usual round to follow what the divine will had done in creation. What she's doing is contemplating God in creation. That's actually what she's doing. Louisa is a superlative contemplative. And she's finding God in everything. And as I said to you before, she doesn't name everything. Mostly she names what she calls the azure above our heads. We call that space where the galaxies are. And she names the sun. And she names the wind and the sea and a few other things. And you rarely have her doing anything else apart from, of course, going into extraordinary detail about the Passion of Christ. So if we contemplate God in the things he has created, then I think we too will become superlative contemplatives. Oh, how beautiful and enchanting it seemed to me, she said. Every single time. Now, she says, every single time I go round it. Now, I would say every single time I contemplate it, I find surprises that enrapture me, new things that I haven't understood before, the ancient and the new love of God that never changes. You remember St. Augustine? O beauty so ancient and so new, late have I loved thee. And it's a sure sign of somebody really penetrating the reality of who God is when they speak about his beauty. Someone who doesn't know God will talk about other things, but they won't talk about his beauty because they don't know it. But if you contemplate him in creation, you will get the beauty and you'll get the harmony and what I call the music of creation. And many people, including myself, who've had a near-death experience, have heard the music of creation, and it's unbelievable. It's unimaginable if you haven't heard it. But contemplation will take you in there and enable you to touch this extraordinary thing. So she says that every time she goes back into this contemplation, she says, I get new things that I've never understood before. So this is not a case of repeating words, saying, I love you for the trees, I love you for the plants, I love you for this and that and the other. It's not that. It's that you're going into this extraordinary contemplation of God and you are being absolutely surprised and blessed and glorified in it. And you get lost in the ecstasy of the love that you're looking at and that you're actually experiencing as well. So Jesus came to her and he said, my little daughter of my will, how beautiful are our works. You see, the beauty is in the harmony, it's in the order, it's in the originality of the works, it's in all kinds of things. I'm sure, well, those of you who came on the retreat with in October, you saw the sheer magnificence of the variety of the trees in the forest that we were in. The absolute magnificence of it. I used to just stand there and say, Lord, how do you do it? How do you get such an absolute variation of colour and size and beauty and detail, and every leaf of every tree is different to the other ones? It just leaves you in absolute awe. It's the beauty of his works. That's why you find in Psalm 96, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. You see, when he brings everything into order in us as well, he brings about an extraordinary beauty. Because everything will be in harmony, everything will be in order, and everything will exude the presence of God and the touch of God, and it will be very attractive to others. Whereas if you merely talk religion at them, it puts them off because they don't have an experience of God. So she's doing this on a daily basis and she's saying it's always new. Now, if the rounds and all of that are becoming dry and so on, if they're that, then I don't think you're actually getting inside of them. But if you get inside of them, they're ever new. And so if you're getting stuck on them, just ask the Lord, take me in there. Allow me to actually contemplate you in your works. So there we have the beauty of it. So he says, look, my little daughter of my will, how beautiful are our works. Everything is solid. Everything is perfect balance. Everything is immutability. There we are looking at attributes of God. So the immutability means that they're not subject to change, nor can they mutate, which of course is change all the time. See then, all creation speaks about and reveals our divine being. And therefore, it is the contemplation of God that we're actually doing when we're contemplating his works. And you find this in Psalm 19, verses 1 to 6. Our solidity in our works, our balance is universal in all things. And no matter how many things may happen, whether pleasing or displeasing, our immutability is always in its place of honor. We have changed nothing of the way it was created. And if the creature sees and feels many various changes, she is the one who changes. She's the one who mutates at every circumstance. We're always changing. And since this changing that we do is both inside of us and outside of us, she feels as if our works, Jesus said, were changing for her. Whereas in actual fact, when we change, we see things differently. If I change from negativity to love, I will see everything different. If I change from depression to hope, I will see everything different. Just to give you two examples. So the change actually happens in us. And when the change happens in us, we begin to see him in a completely different way. But he hasn't changed. And neither have the works changed. It's just that we have changed, and so we can perceive them better. These are her changes, he said, that surround her and have the power to move her away from our immutability. That's the problem, is that human beings change so much that we can actually turn up with false religions and worshipping the earth instead of worshipping God in his creation. Everything is continued and balanced in us, he said. What we did in creation still continues. And since everything was made for those who live in the divine will, now I find that absolutely extraordinary. Because when we started out on the journey of these 36 volumes, you start off by the Lord saying, everything was made for us. And now here we are in volume 30, and he said, everything was made for the true children, the ones who would live in the divine will. And so, as the creature places herself in order in the divine will, now notice that if we're not in order, if the divine order isn't in us, then this is not going to happen. So as the creature places herself in order with the divine will, our creative work carries out its continued act in her. Now notice the word continued. That means every second of every minute of every day of her life. And she feels the life of our immutability. So the soul begins to touch this thing in God that doesn't change, that immutability. The soul begins to touch the perfect balance of our works. And of course, then that perfect balance begins to show in her own life. Our love that loves her always without ever ceasing. Now, it's when we finally reach this eternal love that never ceases. And he doesn't love us because we're good. He doesn't love us because we're bad. He loves us because we're his. And he wants us with him forever. And so this is the eternal love that Jeremiah spoke about in chapter 31, verse 3. I've loved you with an everlasting love, and my love is constant. It doesn't change. So there where we find our will, So there in the soul, where we find our will, we continue the work of our creation. In other words, as soon as we give the Lord a chance, he goes to work, creating new worlds within us, because the kingdom of God is within. He has to create the whole kingdom within us. That's Luke 17:21, or 21:17, I think. Not because our work is interrupted, because our will is not done. He can't do anything. So there's no danger in somebody who is actually doing the will of God. So it's because the purpose for which they were created, which is that of doing our will, is missing in some people, that therefore they have no eyes to see the perfect balance, which is above them, in the balance of the divine works, and to render them immutable together with our immutability. So if people are blind spiritually, they can't enter this. That's number one. If their ears are deaf, they don't have ears to hear what our works are actually proclaiming. So we're not hearing the wonderful message of creation. Now, Psalm 19, verses 1 to 6 says that while creation is mute, it is proclaiming the presence and glory of God to the ends of the earth all the time. But if I'm in a position of spiritual deafness, I won't be able to hear that. And it's my fault if I'm spiritually deaf. So they don't have ears to hear what our works are saying. They don't have hands to touch and receive our continued love that will hold them. So we don't have the ability to touch that. Now, when you're saying hands to touch, you're not actually speaking physically. Neither are you speaking physically with the eyes or the ears. It is that you find yourself in a position where you're not really able to go in and experience all this. Therefore, they themselves render themselves as though estranged from the house of the celestial Father. You see, he's been telling us this all the time. If you get into this condition, it's your own fault. And our acts continue their due course, but for them they remain as though suspended. That's like saying, the train continues its journey whether you get on at a particular station or not. And the train will continue its journey even if you get off at a particular station or not. Because that motion will continue. And it's a terrible thing if the acts of God are continuing forever. And I'm just not part of it. I'm not on the train. Or the flight goes out and I'm not on board. So let's come to December 14, 1931. And here Louisa talks about dying and rising in the divine will. Our dying is the dying of the old ego, and the rising is the rising of the divine will in us. It's also the dying to sin and the rising to the eternal love that's in us. So she says, I'm always back in the divine volition. It seems to me that my little soul takes its flight within its light. Of course, the divine will is the center of the Most Blessed Trinity. God is light, and therefore she can say, I take flight into its light. So that's 1 John 1:5, God is light. Okay. And 2 Timothy 6:16, God dwells in unapproachable light. But in the divine will, you can approach. So it seems to me that my little soul takes its flight within its light to be consumed and to lose its life in the divine will. No. But while I consume myself, I rise again to new love, new light, new knowledge, new strength, new union with Jesus and with his divine will. Now, Louisa wasn't the first to say that. If you go back to the saints that precede Louisa, and very particularly Thérèse of Lisieux, Thérèse said, if you don't come to God with empty hands every day, you won't receive anything. If your hands are full of all your yesterdays, and if you've collected all the problems and all the difficulties of all your yesterdays, your hands are full, you can receive nothing. If we want new love, we've got to let the old go. If we want new knowledge, we're going to have to shift from holding on tightly to what we knew before. If we want new strength, then we're going to have to let what we're holding on to in the past go. If you want new union, you've got to come and actually have a new union with God today. Everything in God is always new. Always new. It's never stale. No matter how long you know God. It's never stale. It's always new. It's always fresh. It's always attractive. It's always wonderful. So there's the continuous dying to the old and rising to the new. So death and resurrection is a normal part of living this spirituality in the divine will. So you rise to new union with Jesus, okay, as well. So she says, oh, happy resurrection that brings so much good to my soul. It seems to me that my soul in the divine will is always in the act of dying to receive the new life, little by little, the resurrection of my will and its own. Now notice the little by little bit. We're only able to truly give ourselves little by little, and therefore the resurrection can only be little by little as well. So then my highest good, Jesus visiting my soul, said, my daughter, our will is the prime or first point and the unmovable and unshakable support of the soul. Now notice that if you're in the divine will, you have the immovable and unshakable support of God. Therefore, you should become very strong. She's carried in the arms of our immensity in such a way that both inside and outside of her, nothing vacillates. Now, this is terribly important. Now, in the early volumes, particularly volumes 1 to 8, I would think, Jesus was telling Louisa time and time again, there mustn't be any vacillating. And we can vacillate between being interested and uninterested, between hot and cold, between fervent and dry and all the rest of it. We can really vacillate. When we get to a place of really solid union with God, you don't vacillate. You don't have these movements. You don't have the weather forecast, because the weather is always the same. And so you get this experience on earth, as people have in heaven, of loving God in peace and joy, regardless of what is happening either inside of you or outside of you. You become stable. There's no more vacillating. Okay. And why is there no more vacillating? It's because you become more and more firmly entrenched in the will of God. And the will of God is everything. The will of God is heaven. The will of God is everything. And so the will of God operating without opposition within me produces wonderful, wonderful prodigies. So the soul is carried in the arms of our immensity in such a way that inside and outside of her, nothing vacillates. Everything is solid and it has insurmountable strength or fortitude. Now, the insurmountable strength or fortitude is something terribly important. The gift of fortitude, I always call it that it's like the steel girders that the architects put into very, very high buildings so that when the hurricanes come, that the building won't come down. And so this insurmountable fortitude means you will not be brought down. You have the victory. Therefore, Jesus said, we want nothing but our will to be done. So as we can find in the depths of the soul, our divine sacrarium or sanctuary. Okay, so this is 1 Corinthians 3:16, 6:19, Luke 17:21. Our divine sacrarium. We can find the hearth. That is, the hearth is the fire. We can find a place inside of this person where true love is really burning, because divine love has to meet love in us. Divine will has to meet a surrendered will in us. And so we have to become like him, because that's what he wants, that we mirror him. We are his reflection. And so in the depths of her soul, we meet the divine sacrarium, the hearth that always burns and is never extinguished. So that is the unconditional love which is established. We find the light. This soul is enlightened. We find the light that forms the divine and perennial day. Now, a perennial is eternal. Okay. In other words, eternal life has begun. in a very serious way in this soul. And she's showing the light of faith. She's showing love. She's showing commitment to God. She's showing that she has union with God and that she's contemplating God in the depths of her being. She has made space for God because she surrendered her own will. And therefore, she begins to discover things she couldn't discover before. When the divine will reigns in the soul, gets rid of all that is human. Now, notice you have to get rid of it. There's no way that the human and the divine is going to mix. It happens then that from the center of her soul, she gives us divine acts, divine honors, divine prayer, and divine love, which possess invincible strength and insurmountable love. This is the soul at its highest level. So much so that as you in my will wanted to embrace all the works of those who are in heaven and of the creatures that are on the earth, so that all might ask that the divine will be done on earth as it is in heaven, all the works remained marked by the honour of asking that my fiat be the life of each creature and that the divine will may reign and dominate in them. In other words, it made a difference. And our divinity received the greatest honour that all of our works would ask for the life, the kingdom of the divine will. So you notice how important it is for us to actually do that action. Now, watch this. No deed of grace. You have the word rescript of grace, which is the same thing. No deed of grace is conceded by us if it is not signed with the golden signature of our will. In other words, you cannot operate in this kingdom without the divine will. It's as simple as that. The doors of heaven do not open but for one who wants to do our will. That's why we've got to intercede for our society so much today. Our paternal needs do not adapt to take into our arms and to let her rest on our loving bosom. The only one is the one who comes as the daughter of our volition. So the privileges that he's talking about here are only for the children in the divine will. They're not for anybody else. Now, in the next paragraph, we're told there's actually no limit to what you can become in the divine will. If there is a limit, you've put it on. He's not putting any limits. Here then is the great distinction that our supreme being used in creating the heavens, the sun, the earth and so forth from the way of creating man. In all of the created things outside of us, the divine will placed the enough. That needs to be in inverted commas. He has placed the enough. In other words, thus far and no further. As you read in the book of Ecclesiasticus. With regard to the sea, for example, the sea was told thus far and no further. So there was an enough place there in the way. So that they can neither grow nor decrease, although it placed in them all the sumptuousness and beauty and magnificence of the work that comes out of our hands. So they were completely sufficient, but they weren't allowed to grow or decrease. There wasn't any free will there. On the other hand, which is a very Jewish way of speaking, on the one hand and on the other hand. On the other hand, in creating man, since we had to hold our dwelling place in him, now do you see that right from the very beginning, God had intended that we, our hearts, our souls, our whole being would be the throne of God on earth. Dwelling place is better than seat. We had to hold our dwelling place or our tabernacle in him. Now, if I simply change that to tabernacle, I want to give you John 1:14, that the word became flesh and tabernacled among us. He actually came to live with us. Okay. But I also want to give you the text I've already given you in 1 Corinthians 3:16 and so on. And therefore, our will dominating and operating did not place the enough. And again, that enough should be in inverted commas. No, but it gave him the power of doing the multiplicity of works, steps, words, and one after the other. In other words, the man was supposed to be able to imitate his creator. our will in man would remain hampered if it did not give him the power of doing work ever new, in other words, imitating God. Now, the problem we have today in the 21st century worldwide is that man has made the mistake of thinking he is a creator, that there's nothing he can't do. If you give them challenge, they just say, well, give us time and we'll work it out. In other words, they think they've actually become the creator, which is really sad. But we were meant to create works in imitation of him. So he was meant to do works ever new, not subject to only one work or saying one word or of moving his steps in one path alone. In other words, God did not want to limit the human being at all. I wanted to give the human being a challenge to really grow. God wanted to see where it would go. And you get this idea in Genesis chapter 6, when you're told that God looked down and said, well, if you keep going down this route, it'll be just too bad. We'll have to stop it. So they were being creative, but in the wrong direction. The human being was created by us as king of creation. What the book of Genesis says is Lord of creation. Because since his creator, the King of Kings, was to dwell in him, it was right that he who formed the dwelling of the divine being, and that's what we are, tabernacles of the Most High. So he who formed the dwelling of our divine being would be the little king who was to dominate the very things created by us. Now that's what you find in Psalm 8. You've made us little less than a god, and with glory and honour you crowned us, giving us power over the works of your hands and putting all things under our feet. That's exactly what you're being told here. And Jesus continues, and man himself, for love of us, was to have the power to do not just one work, but many works and many sciences, to be able to start new things. And also to give honour to the one who dwelled inside of him, and who, remaining with him in intimate conversation, would teach him many beautiful things to do and say. Now, the tragedy of human history is written right there. That if human beings had remained faithful to God and had understood that they were the tabernacle of the Most High, they would have actually worked with God to make the most wonderful things on the earth. Whereas we have sometimes made the most hellish disasters because we've gone down in different directions. The World War II is an example of a hellish disaster. So you can imagine the disappointment of God then when we wouldn't allow him to actually participate in what we were doing. And what the Lord wants from all of us living in the divine will is that we would allow him to actually participate in our teaching, in our working, in absolutely everything that we do. And the more we do that, the more transformative the experience is. Therefore, our love in creating man was insuperable. You just couldn't imagine it. But so much that it was to overwhelm all centuries, to give love and ask for love and to form in him the kingdom of the divine will. Now, initially, God simply wanted to form the kingdom. That's the whole issue in the Old Testament, to form the kingdom of God on earth, that God would have a people, that he could be the ruler of that people and so on. Now, when you come into the 21st century and he is wanting to form the kingdom of the divine will, now he wants to reign in each one of us. That, of course, means the resurrection of the church. We have no other aim for humanity. We have no other sacrifice but for them to do our will. Now, I could give you 1,000 references for that. It's all over the Old Testament. Go back to any of the prophets of the Old Testament and they will say, God never asked anything of you except that you would do his will. And you have Psalms which say, Psalm 50, for example, I never asked you to kill all these animals and offer them in sacrifice to me. I only asked you to do my will. And it seems human beings will do anything except God's will. And so, as you can see from this statement and me saying it's all over the Bible, then you will see that God's will doesn't change. It's immutable. And he said, and this was in order to give man the right to be king of himself and of created things. Now notice the order there, that he would be king over himself first, because if we don't have self-mastery, we have nothing. We cannot be the king or lord of created things if we are chaotic within ourselves and we have no authority within ourselves. That's why from the very beginning that we enter into relationship with God, he insists on purification, purification, purification the whole way. And so it was to give man the right to be able to dwell in him with our decorum and honour as our citadel and royal palace that belongs to us. That's what the Lord wanted. And when you just realise what he wanted, it is so sad we have failed him so completely. So the final paragraph then, the man, the human being, was meant to be the temple of the living God. So before I even read it, I want to give you 1 Peter 2:5-7, where Peter is saying those exact words. God intended us to be living stones. When the divine will is inside of each one of us, we become a living stone, and all of us together become the living temple of God on earth. That's what Peter says, first Pope. After this, Louisa said, while I continued my abandonment in the divine volition, my beloved Jesus added, my good daughter, you must know that our will has its life, its dominion, and its dwelling place in the centre of our divine being. Now, we've just been talking about the divine will trying to live in the centre of our being. And now he says you need to know that the divine will is the centre of our being. And that's why, right from the very beginning, I said the answer to what is the divine will, it's the operative centre of God, of the three divine persons. So it forms one single thing with us, that is with the Father, the Son and the Holy Spirit. And our very life from its centre, it emits its rays full of its life and it fills the heavens and the earth, fills the whole universe is the way we would put it. Now, for one who lives in our will, her acts are formed in the centre of the divine will. That is, in the centre of our divine being. This is what is so incredible about what we're doing. In other words, we're operating inside of God, not outside of him. On the other hand, for one who only does our will, even though they do good, but they don't live in the divine will, her acts are formed in the rays which the divine will emits from its centre. So it's a bit further out. There is a difference between one who could operate in the light that the sun spreads from the centre of its sphere and one who could rise into its centre of light. So there's a difference between the one who can operate in the light that the sun spreads and the one who can actually enter into the sun itself. Now, in our divine will acts, we're entering into the sun itself. This one would feel the consummation of her being, what Louisa was saying at the very beginning this evening, the dying, the consummation of her being, and the rising again to a new life, the death and resurrection. And she would experience it in that light, in such a way that it would be difficult for her to detach herself from within the sphere of light, which Louisa has been saying all the time. She can't find a way out of this incredible sea of light that she's in. On the other hand, the others who operate in the light that fills the earth don't feel the intense power of the light that consumes them. And we need to be careful that we understand our experience in the divine will so that we know whether we're operating at a distance or operating in the centre. The ones on the outside don't feel the intense power of the light, but you hear Louisa saying all the time that empowering her and very, very strong. So they also don't experience that it consumes them, nor that they rise again in the same light. So it's a more distant experience for those who are simply doing the will of God or operating at a distance. And even though they do good, they remain as they are. Now, this is very, very important, because if we are not being transformed, we're not in the divine will. The divine will automatically transforms anything that comes into it, because the divine will make us like God. So if we're not being transformed, if we're not being purified, you've got to ask yourself, what am I doing wrong? And it's most likely you would not be surrendering the human will. Such is the difference between the one who lives and who does my will. So for as many acts as she does in my will, so many times does she rise again to divine life. I've said that slowly. For every single act in the divine will, we rise to the divine life, and therefore we have to be transformed. We have to be changed. It's not actually possible not to. So if there's no transformation happening in us, we've got to get help. And as she rises to divine life, she is consumed and dies to what is human. And that's exactly where Louisa started this evening. That what is human and what is the old ego and the sinful part of us, that's got to go. That's got to die. Because otherwise the divine will cannot actually stay. Nothing unholy or unworthy will enter the presence of God. Hebrews 12:14. So how beautiful are these resurrections in the soul, the Lord says. Because each resurrection tells the Lord that this soul is coming closer and closer to him. It's enough to say that they are formed by the wisdom and the mastery of the divine maker. And this says everything, all the beauty and all the goodness that we can do in the creature. So it's terribly important for us over the Christmas, when everybody's enjoying themselves, to keep remembering that in everything we lay down our human life and we lay down our human will and give the Lord a chance to triumph in us. So happy Christmas to everyone.